Hello, caller, you on the air?
Yeah, it's Matt Johnson.
Oh, man, hold on. Let me give you the clap, sir. Larry, first of all, we want to thank you for calling in, taking the time out of your day to have this conversation with us.
No problem, no problem. Anything for you guys.
Oh, man. Okay, so what we do, man, we got our sports guru, man. He's a writer, an award-winning writer for our local paper. He's going to start the interview off. He's going to ask you some questions, and then we'll follow up with some stuff, okay?
Yeah.
All right, Tim, it's all yours.
Larry, Tim Martin here. I just want to say it's an honor to talk to you, man, and you had a great NFL career, and really great of you to take time to talk with us, man. But
no problem.
I'm going to dive right in. I know you've been outspoken about the CTE issues in the NFL today. Where do you stand with that right now, and what do you think the NFL needs to do to make improvements along those lines?
I mean, there's nothing the NFL can really do to make any improvements on anything. The sport is what it is. It's a contact collision sport. There's nothing that NFL can change. The NFL can't buy out, you know, the companies that make helmets like Shutt and Rydell. They can't buy those companies out and remake helmets. The sport, it is what it is, and it comes with every sport, I think, comes with a risk factor. We signed up for this. We signed up for this since we were young. We knew we wanted to play the game of football. We knew we wanted to play in the NFL. So guys are kind of taking it as it is what it is. What we have to do after the game is done is actually pay attention to the signs and pay attention to the illnesses that come with having CTE and making sure we monitor ourselves that way. Anything that we do from the time players are in the NFL right now until the time we retire, it's already too late. Mm-hmm. It already happened. We already have CTE when we played high school, when we played college. Now the pros is a little bit more about managing your body and making sure that you're not taking any unnecessary hits or making any unnecessary hits while you're in your career.
No doubt about it. Well said. Tell me about what you think about the NFL, the state of the NFL right now. There's been controversy, it seems, all season long, this past season in particular, you know, with all sorts of different things happening. But how do you see the NFL going forward? Is it on solid ground? Is there some things that really need to be worked on? What's your take on that?
My take on it is now everybody sees the NFL players as now not necessarily being property. Mm-hmm. And now most of the guys being black and African-American in the league, they have a right to speak out. They have a voice. And a lot of people are feeling really, very disgruntled because before you couldn't hear the players talk about social issues. And people, a lot of fans forget most of these players have families, have brothers, have sisters. We're not just robots that you just come out of a factory and here go play football. Like, we have souls, we have cares and things. We care about other, you know, athletes. We care about athletes' families. We care about each other's children. We're a very close-knit bunch when it comes to the NFL alumni. And I think it's been awakening that now players are standing up for their own rights and standing up for the rights of others, which I love. And now a lot of fans are feeling disgruntled because you're tired. You think that you could just turn your TV on Sundays and just see us play and not think that we have lives outside of Sunday. And a lot of fans now get adjusted to that, knowing that we care about more than just riding around a Lambo or spending money in a club. You guys actually care about what goes on in the community.
Larry, I tell you what, man, you're bringing the truth here today.
Yeah, man.
Loving
it,
man. Hey, give me your take on Roger Goodell. Do you think he's doing a good job as commissioner of the NFL right now, or are there improvements he could be making in what he's doing?
I mean, it could be good. It could be improvements. He really could be more of a player's. Like, everybody loved Paul Tagliabue because Paul Tagliabue was a player's owner. I mean, he was a player's guy. And that's what we loved about Paul Tagliabue. You didn't really see any kind of, nonsense with Paul Tagliabue. Now with Roger Goodell, now a lot of things, supposed, social media comes out and a lot of interest in the players' lives. I think he should do a better job, and when players get in trouble, to make sure he finds out the whole truth and not use it halfway and say, now we know about the truth. And try to guard himself by basically punishing players where they need to be punished at. I think he really needs to sit back and get all the information and take it from there. I think he gets frazzled and he gets shook when players get in trouble, and his first thing to do is to suspend them for the whole entire season, and then when he comes out with the facts, it comes out, now I have to reduce it, or if I try to hide the truth and more people find out, then he's like, now I got to punish this guy harder than the last guy I've been punished. I don't think that's fair. I think he really needs to keep a consistent basis when it comes to punishing players.
Right on. I'll talk to you about this past NFL season. Were you surprised? I mean, the Eagles winning the Super Bowl as they did, defeating the Patriots. I mean, a lot of people had the Patriots going all the way again, but the Eagles came up and beat them. Were you surprised about that at all?
I was not surprised at all. And Eagles, when you get a team that's an underdog team, and you get a team that's willing to fight, you get the senses of what is happening around as far as the whole emotion and the whole environment of what that game was or what that game was supposed to be. I knew the Eagles were going to win. I said this before, you know, they even played the game. I knew the Eagles were going to win the Super Bowl because they came with a certain type of fire. And there's a certain type of vibe that you get when you watch the Patriots play it and when you watch the Eagles play. The Eagles' defense was outstanding. They played a perfect game, and Foles played a perfect game with it. I mean, you got to do that to be a team like the New England Patriots.
Hey, Larry, I just have a quick question. For someone who is, you know, has NFL aspirations right now, and as someone who's had a career like yours, two-time Pro Bowler, you went through your trials and tribulations, what advice do you give them for today's NFL?
I think today's NFL is understand there's going to be always a double standard when it comes to black and white players. Now, for the white players, you do what you do. But as far as being the leads, being the majority black, you have to understand there's going to be a double standard. You will be judged harder than you will any other player in that league. You have to understand that. So if you want to throw flags in the stands, if you want to, you know, commit domestic violence as just like I have, and nowadays you can't do that anymore. So you have to understand that any punishment that's going to come down to you is going to come down on you harder because they have to set an example for the younger players coming in the league. It's all about our control and an image when it comes in the NFL. If you want to be a young player, I would suggest you clean up your social media. I suggest you clean up your act. I suggest you clean up the way you dress, the way you talk. I'm not telling you to sell out. I'm not telling you to be Uncle Tom. I'm not telling you to do any of that. What I'm telling you is to be corporate, which is just to be a businessman, which is to be understand that this is a professional business. And if they're going to give you $22 million over 6 or 7 years that you can play this game, I would advise you keep your mouth shut, do what you need to do, and if you want to help out the community, take the money they give you for free, that play this game that we would play for free. Take that money that you do and then spend some of it and then help your community out without having to do all this unnecessary protesting when you can just shut your mouth and do what you need to be doing. And then if you want to spend money on the community, if you want to help out against, you know, black and police drama and all that, you can do that on your own time. You don't have to bring that drama on the field. We understand that what it is right now and then as far as the sense of the racism in this country and the presidency and all that. We understand that. But if you're going to do something about it, do it with your actions, not with your mouth when you're trying to get money and try to, you know, support your family.
Nice.
That's deep. I want to go back, Larry. What was or who was the first person to introduce you to football?
My father, of course. My father has always been in my life. My father basically bred me in the game of football. I didn't go outside. I didn't have summer vacations. My summer vacations were at football, whatever football camp he was running at that time. That's what my summer vacations were. I even trained with the high school players when I was in, you know, Pop Warner League just to get my conditioning right. My dad did everything to introduce me to football. When I went to the beach, I didn't just go to the beach and, like everybody else, walk on the boardwalk and go jumping waves. My dad made me put a football in my hand, which at that time was a K2, and told me, don't fumble and go out there and run against some waves. And in Ocean City, Maryland, those waves were pretty hot.
Oh, yeah.
So most of the times I used to get dunked, but as long as I woke up with that football in my hand, that's just what it was to me. My dad introduced me to the game of football. I could never, you know, be mad at him as far as my mental state now because, you know, me and my dad have a real, real close relationship, and I can never regret something that my dad introduced me to.
Mm-hmm. Now, your dad's coaching still at Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was telling the fellas, I mean, he's viewed as one of the best recruiters in the nation. I mean, what's the secret? I mean, he's just one of those guys that they say that can go into a recruit's homes and win them over just with his personality.
It really is no secret. It shouldn't be a secret to loyalty and honesty. That's what everything my father does.
Mm-hmm.
My father goes in the homes and tells you the truth. He won't lie to you. He ain't going to promise you anything. He's going to be completely honest with you. And the fact that, you know, it's easy to go into homes when you already have a son that's already been drafted first round and been to the Pro Bowl. You don't really need that much, you know, recruiting after that.
Like, yeah, exactly.
My dad's living proof. Uh-huh. My dad's living proof of what he did for me. And so going ahead, you know, it's easy to go talk to kids' parents because my dad's been there and done that. And the fact that I've gone through my trials and tribulations and he has never left my side should be the benchmark of everybody wanting to go to Ohio State just because of my father.
All right.
That's what's up, man. And Roll Tide.
Uh-oh.
I had to.
Roll Tide.
I had to. Let's talk about, you was on the PlayStation 2 cover, right? For
It was Game Breaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk about that, man. How'd that feel, being on the cover and everything?
I mean, it was dope. Everybody always in games for, like, shoots for, like, EA Sports, the whole thing, and then, you know, Carson Palmer took that one. But to get NCAA Game Breaker and to be a young kid, 20 years old, with a game out with your picture on it, mm-hmm. and your Penn State uniform and your autograph on it, man, that's a mm-hmm. blessing. Not many people could ever say that they had a cover on PlayStation or a game with the picture on it. So it was a blessing, man. I was just kind of geeked out about it. And it was just, I was on a cloud nine. Like, it was something that you really can't really process until your career is always done, because once you on that cover, now you're like, all right, now I have to prove myself that I was worthy to be on that cover.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I remember it was a couple Maddens, man, where you was unstoppable. it was like a cheat code.
The funny thing about that, people was like, my speed was never up to par. I didn't care about the speed. You know, players always complain that they weren't fast. They never get to intercept. I'm like, yo, I checked the stats. What was my break tackles and my
that's what it was.
That's all I cared about.
That juke and that spin move was serious.
That's all I had. Truck stick. Truck stick was all I needed.
But so what was your favorite NFL moment?
My favorite NFL moment was the first touchdown I scored. It was the same game Priest Holmes broke the touchdown record against the Chicago Bears, and mm-hmm. I was hoping that he would do it against the Chicago Bears so I at least get the play. And at that time, it was really a 50-50 coin toss if I was even going to suit up for some game. So that game, I wasn't even supposed to suit up, because mostly it's a numbers game, and I'm already the third depth chart running back, and I don't play special teams. Mm-hmm. So it would be hard enough for me to get in the game. So when the game was pretty much out of touch, I got in the game like maybe the last series, and I took a toss and reversed it right field, broke a tackle against a D tackle, and that was literally my first touchdown in my career. I mean, I just kind of pretty much fell to my knees and kind of like thank God and thank the universe, because I did so much and sacrificed so much and went through so much trauma as far as mentally and emotionally to keep mm-hmm. myself upbeat and making sure, like, you know, it's going to be a long season, it's going to be a long career for me, so just take everything in stride and not get, you know, too frustrated. But that was kind of like everything was kind of like solidifying itself for me, knowing that I should be in the NFL by that touchdown.
Let's talk about some of the videos, man. You were in the Fantasia video, right?
When I see you,
the leading role, dog. With a New York Yankee hat on too, yo.
Oh,
talk about that.
It was fun. See, at the time, I was getting ready to be engaged. It was a winter before I was going to be engaged, and so I brought my girlfriend to the set, and it was funny because I was living in New York at the time, and they were just looking for somebody to shoot one day, and then I happened to get a phone call and say, hey, you want to do a Fantasia video that's down the street from you? I was like, all right, shoot, I ain't doing nothing. I literally just woke up. I was like, I ain't doing nothing. So, all right, meet us at the set. And I got there, and I didn't know who she was, really. And, you know, I didn't really follow her like that. But then when I got on set, it was very cool. Like, she was really cool. And, you know, she did the whole little kiss thing afterwards.
I was going to ask you about
that. It was a cool feeling. Yeah, it was a cool feeling. Like, everybody's like, oh, why are you kissing? I'm like, hey, how are you talking about? It's a video. You know what I mean? And they slowed it down. So really, it was just a peck, but because it was a video, they slowed it down. So it made it seem like I kissed her extra long. But it was literally just a peck.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, was it a real kiss? Because they did slow it down. I was mm-hmm. like, yo, that looked like a real kiss.
Nah, right, it was just it was a peck. It wasn't like a real, like a broke kiss. My girl would have killed me if she knew it was like a real kiss.
Babe, it's for the video.
All right, so from Fantasia, then you were in, like, one of my favorite songs mm-hmm. ever, you know. And you threw up the rock in the video. You was in Rock Boys. Talk about that, man, because, I mean.
Because everybody was in there, all the big people.
All the big people, yeah.
Man, it was like a surreal moment. Like, I got there on set, I'm thinking, like, Jay Tech, I literally got on a flight from Vegas to head to New York. He's like, yo, I need you to come out here for this Rock Boys video. He's like, make this thing, when you dress, just think Black Gangster. I was like, all right, cool, I just throw on a suit. So I get on a suit, man, I come in, I see Mariah Carey, Phoenix Siegel, Freeway, Zab Judah, mm-hmm. And I'm like,
yeah, nah,
and I'm standing behind Puffin, like, I'm just standing by, all right, you're going to say action. and Puff sees me, my tie a little crooked, Puff gets up and corrects my tie. He goes, there you go. I was like, after that, I was no good after that whole video. I was like, you frustrated my tie. It was a great video, man. It was dope because it was making sure that I was the one, you know, that they see me more in the video, because obviously I was signed to S. Don Carter. I was wearing the cleats on the field, so it makes sense, like being a Rock Boys video, that they show me certain different times, because I'm making touchdowns and throwing up the rock all the time. So it's like they looked out for me as far as that thing, making sure that I was represented well. And it was cool. It was a cool video, and it was like a great relationship between me and Jay, and being around him and Beyonce. It was just a surreal moment, man. You never thought that you at 19 and 20 into your early 20s that you were gonna be in this type of environment. And when it happens, it's just a surreal moment.
How did the relationship with you and Jay start? I mean, I know you were signed to The Rock, but how did that even develop?
It actually started with Dame. Dame started Team Rock, and he was doing boxes at the time, and he wanted to branch out and do other sports. So when he started doing the Team Rock clothing line, they were looking for players. So I happened to be real close for a couple of guys who were already working with Rock. One of my best friends, Anthony Duran, you know, he helped me out. He said, yo, we should just use Larry. You know, he's from the East Coast, and, you know, Penn State is close to New York, so he has a good fan base. So they just took, and it was like, yeah, but he's not starting. And it just so happens that time that Priest went down and I was running 1700, I had signed to The Rock that same season, and it just everything kind of hit it at the right moment in time, and that's how I got involved. And when Jay and Dame split, I went with Jay, and Dame just kind of did his own thing, but Jay folded me into Rockaware. And that's when I started doing some Team Rock. I started doing Rock and Roll. So that's how it happened.
Tell us the most craziest thing you did with your first paycheck. Like, what's the most, like, silliest thing that you spent money on that you go back and say, man, I never should have bought that?
I really can't regret it, because everything I spent my money on, it was worth it. So the first time I spent my check, I spent $75,000 to get my G-Wagon colored, and I put all the running backs and all the players that I looked up to as far as the old days, I had them stitched in the seat of the back of my G-Wagon. So if you look online, you would see it. You would see Herschel Walker, Tony Dorsett, Bo Jackson. You would see the actual jersey stitched into my seat.
Wow.
And that cost me like a good like 75 to 100 G's, but it was well worth it, though.
Wow. That's deep right there.
What was your favorite team growing up?
It's kind of funny. I didn't really follow. Like, it's different. My dad didn't really raise us to be fans of teams. He raised us to be fans of players. Mm-hmm. So when at that time I lived in the Maryland area, we would always watch the Redskins and Cowboys games. My mom was a Cowboys fan only because she loved Emmitt Smith. And my dad was a Redskins fan because he was a free agent for the Redskins. So me, I was into players. So I didn't really have a team. You know, I would watch Emmitt Smith. But then I was a fan of Doug Williams, Art Monk, Gary Clark, Clint Didier. Like, I had those guys to look at every day on the TV. And then, of course, you know, the running backs that they had during the 90s, like Barry Sanders, Bo Jackson, Marcus Allen, like, those are the guys I look up to. So I was really, an old-school players guy.
When was the first time you were starstruck, and by who?
I really wasn't starstruck by anybody, but I think the first thing that had, first person that really had an impression on me was Gary Clark. My dad used to always take us to watching the Redskins training camp, and I was very shy. My brother was really outgoing, and when Gary Clark and those guys came off the field, my dad was like, yeah, you should get an autograph. So my brother ran up to Gary Clark to get an autograph. Gary Clark ran right past him like he didn't even see him, and I saw my brother's face, and that from there, kind of, that struck me. I was like, if I ever get to the point when I was in the league, I am never passing up autographs.
And so there you go.
Until this day, I have never said no to an autograph. I've stayed after games to sign autographs. I made sure everybody had always got an autograph signed by me. If they were waiting on me or waiting for me, I made sure I never passed it up. That's the kind of thing that really stuck with me and kind of stuck with me all the way through my career.
That's dope, man.
Oh, yeah.
I read that you actually don't remember playing two seasons. Obviously you can't talk about it if you don't remember it, but I mean, how does that feel? Like,
it's not even a haze, right? It's just literally blank. And I think it's because I feel like I suffered some type of trauma where I just can't remember because I don't want to remember. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a great season for me because Todd Haley came in, and the offense was completely different from what I'm used to. And so going through that whole season, I felt like I failed more than I succeeded. And for some reason, I just don't remember it. You know, it's hard for me to comment on, but I just don't. It's just that 2 years is just a blank spot to me. It's something I just don't remember, or not if I don't remember, want to remember. I haven't seen the game footage for any of those games that I played in, and I don't think I would want to anyway, but it's just the way it was now.
So do you think that's effects of CTE, or is it just more you blocking that out?
Nah, CTE is a behavioral mental illness. If you forget, if you have a short-term memory, that's pretty basically what it is. Mm-hmm. Short-term memory disease.
Do you have any kids?
Yeah, I have a 7-year-old daughter
that
lives with me.
Okay, if you had a son, would you allow your son to play football at the Pop Warner level with everything as it is right now, or would you want some changes to maybe protect your kid, you know, from possible CTE or what you said, what the sport is really about?
I would wait till he gets, like, at least into high school or at least into, like, when he's, like, 13, 14. I wanted to get him into football, but not at a younger stage. I just think, you know, mentally and emotionally and behavioral-wise, I don't think kids should play Pop Warner football because kids shouldn't be working on aggression or learning how to not be vulnerable by playing Pop Warner football. And that's what most of those coaches do. If you ever watch Friday Night Tights, you see coaches who act like they've never even been young kids before. They treat these kids like they're teenagers by telling them to stop crying, walk it off, stop moping around. Like those are the type of things that I went through when I was younger, and I try to cover it up by being extra masculine or being toxic masculinity.
Right.
And I didn't want those kids to go through that. I don't want kids to work on aggression, revenge, and all that. And all those things that football can give you, I didn't want kids at young ages to work on that personality part of their persona. I want them to be able to say, hey, if something hurts, just go tell coach it hurts. Don't try to tough it up or get punished by running last because you hurt or you didn't want to hit a guy. Like, I don't want kids to grow up that way.
Okay.
Nice.
Here goes the big question. How do you know Rashad Boxdale?
I think he played a little bit after I already left.
Mm-hmm.
So I already know he was like back up to Jamal or at that time when they were going through a shuffle of running backs. So that's pretty much how I know him. And then we kind of like find each other on social media and just kind of went from there. Like for me, anytime any of my brothers that play in the league or he played the position, they're all brothers to me. And like I love when guys can come out and reach out and ask for stuff that they need me to do. I'm always going to respond 100%, and I'm always going to do it for them because like we all brothers, we all look out for each other. And we like the same way with, you know, our children. Like, I always call, like friends of mine, they're always like the play uncle. That's how we are to each other. And we keep it like an alumni because that's how much we care for each other, making sure we all are good, not just because we played, you know, different positions or for different teams that we always enemies to the end. No, we're brothers in this whole thing.
Are you a one-sport athlete, two-sport, three, four?
I was a 3-4 athlete. I mean, I was really 4 because I could play baseball, but my dad, for football purposes, he always wanted me to do track. So I did track, basketball, and I did football.
Okay, so you got some basketball game?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, I'm more like Anthony Mason. Like me, I'm more of a defender. Like I'm in the check you like I'm a hockey player. That's my game.
And
my game is to intimidate you to make sure you never come to this box no more.
Okay, I respect that. The tournament is coming up. I mean, the event is coming up, man. And, you know, even one thing that you said about the autographs, there's a lot of kids here, man, that do know who you are, and they're just going to have their eyes wide open and just be looking for you to sign autographs. And the fact that you're good with that, that's a great, great feeling, man.
Mm-hmm.
You're definitely going to come here and make a lot of people happy, man.
I mean, I also, like, I know, like, a lot of kids, when I go through a lot of talks at different Pop Warner teams and I go to high schools and juvenile detention centers for my job, and when I talk, it's kind of hard to get kids to remember who you are, because most of these kids weren't even born when I played. So, like, usually I like to re-educate them a little bit, because I swear, kids swear they think they're the ones that are doing it first, and I have to put the tape on to let them know that they ain't the first ones to do it.
How were you able to turn your life around after being through so much tribulations?
It was my daughter, to tell you the truth. It was my daughter and the fact that I started to find a purpose and I started to really check myself. Like me, at that young age, in my young 30s, it was, I blame everybody for me not being in the league. I blame everybody for the way I turned out. I blame all the women I was with, the way I am, the way I am. And I just started to self-reflect. I really stopped drinking heavily and started I stopped using the club as an excuse to get my emotions out. And that's where most of my problems came from, is to release all my emotions into the club. And most of the time, it's too much for me. And I started understanding where my brain and where my mental state was at that time in the last 5 or 10 years. I started really going to therapy. I really going to sessions and getting all that pent-up aggression out. I started really self-reflecting on all the things I could have done and things that I blame people for. It was literally me at the end of it. At the end of that tunnel, it was always me. So I started changing around. And plus, I have a little girl, you know, so it was kind of like that happening to me at the same time, where I didn't want my child to go to another LJ. I didn't want her to be without a father. And my father raised me regardless. And I didn't want to be that dad, to be a deadbeat dad where I couldn't raise my child because I'm in jail for fighting in clubs or I wasn't around my daughter because I was always too aggressive and all that. I really had to change for her.
Larry, what are you up to these days? Any special projects on the table? Maybe even some more videos coming your way. What are you doing?
I work for a nonprofit. Actually, I sit on the board of directors of a nonprofit, and I'm a director of a health and wellness program called the Motivational Edge. If anybody want to check it out, it's motivationaledge.org. And what I do is help foster children, foster families, juvenile detention centers, after-school programs. What I do, which is crazy to me, is I help mentally ill behavioral children have an outlet with art. And I graduated Penn State with a graphic arts degree, and my first love was art. So I'm basically teaching children to release that aggression, release that hopelessness, and to channel it into something good, and channel it into art, performance art, lyrical expression. So I'm getting children with insane adult mental illness behavioral problems at such young ages, because they come from broken backgrounds, broken families. I teach them to let go of all of that with art and just having a good time being around different mentors. I had Brian McKinney at my last mental illness wellness activity with the kids, and he did a great job. So it's just kids being around grown-ups that know that they actually appreciate them.
That's what's up.
All right, man. Hey, Larry, man, we can't thank you enough for taking time out to chop it up with us, man. You're a great interview, I can tell you that,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it was an honor speaking to you.
Honor, man. And we will definitely see you on March 16th. I am one of the coaches. My name is Big Vern. I'm a coach. And Coach Slay over there.
Yeah, yeah.
You're probably going to want to be on my team because we win. And you seem like you're a winner, so you're probably going to want to be on my team.
Just remember who actually played with you in Madden.
You're a dirty dog. Larry, you want to give any shout-outs or anything like that before you go?
I'm going to get a shout out to Barksdale. I'm going to make sure I see you. I'm going to make sure we're going to see who will see what at this basketball game.
Yeah, yeah.
It was popping on that. And thanks to y'all, man. I always appreciate being able to be on radio and being able to speak my mind and speak my heart without any other, you know, backlash from it and all that. So I appreciate being on shows like this.
All right, man. Listen, man, you got the red carpet, man. You can come on here and talk to us anytime. You are a great interview, man, because your expression goes through the airways, man. Mm-hmm. You can really tell that what you say is real. So we respect it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
No problem.
All right, bro. Take care, man. We see you in March.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
All right. Yep. No problem. All right.